This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahmat.
I'm Vizla Kumarisen.
And you're listening to Digital Desires, the show that explores how screen culture is changing human interaction. And today we're going to talk about an interesting piece published on the Malaysian Insight from September, but I think it's still very dated. Because it talks about sex addiction among Malaysian youths, and the conclusion that it makes is that it is on the rise. Now, what came to mind first and foremost when you read this, Vizla?
All right, so the article details this young woman's story about how she got introduced to porn and how she later consumed porn. Right. And she says that she would access porn websites whenever she had access to Wi-Fi networks. Mm-hmm. And as since she was studying at a university and she stayed on campus, that access was only at home. Mm-hmm. And she called it a porn addiction. And the article also refers to this behavior as porn addiction. And this is one of the things that really jumped out at me at first. Mm-hmm. We tend to use the word addiction very easily these days. And I think this description of this young woman's consumption of pornography, calling it addiction, might not be entirely accurate.
Mm-hmm. So can you explain then what constitutes an addiction and where the difference is between addiction and normal consumption?
So an addiction means you cannot actually live without whatever it is you're addicted to.
Mm.
You are consumed by it all the time, every time. And all you want to do is access or have mm-hmm. whatever it is that you have an addiction to. I'll give you an example. Many people have caffeine addictions.
Right.
And if you don't have access to caffeine, you actually get withdrawal symptoms. It could be headaches, it could be palpitations, any of those things. Mm. Right. So there's an actual reaction, an adverse reaction when you don't have mm-hmm. What it is you're addicted to. So with this example that the article is talking about in the Malaysian Insight, this young woman goes the entire week or for long stretches of time while she's not at home and she doesn't have access to that kind of internet. Mm-hmm. She can go without watching porn. She might be thinking about it, mm-hmm. but that's different. She can still control her behavior. Right. Someone with real addiction will not be able to do that. They'll constantly be looking for opportunities or some way to be able to watch these pornographic images or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I would say, this would be an example of quote-unquote normal consumption.
I see.
That's what I would think.
But even given her age?
Given her age, so this article,
She's 12.
She's 12, yes. Things are changing now, as we've talked about, because the internet is so accessible. It is in our palms. We carry little computers with us all the time. Previously, it used to be that you needed a VCR, you needed mm-hmm. television, you needed privacy and all those things to be able to consume porn. Now it's on our screens. It's in our hands. I think what is normal age range-wise, is also changing given these circumstances.
And unfortunately, the discussion isn't happening because a lot of the positions taken and the tone in which this issue is often talked about is immediately very judgmental and immediately very stigmatizing.
And also very moralizing, right? In the same article, it details how these young women, right, it creates this trajectory. So she watched porn and then she started having sexual intercourse at an early age and then she had an unwanted pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's just made a connection that may or may not be causal.
Yeah, and it's alarmist too,
exactly.
Right? Because I think the steps between A to Z, right, especially in that almost catastrophic manner has to be explained a lot more, has to be thought through. Now, and on that point too, I wonder if the article would have had a different point if the subject was, say, an adult, right? So the adult was narrating the same encounter with the device and access. Would it have taken a different tone? Probably not, because you can sense from early on that the position was made.
Yeah. And of course, I think the fact that this is a child, the article does imply a bit of an alarmist tone. I mean, I can't say for sure that the article is written with that, but the implication is there, right? But it might have been different. The focus of the story might have been different if it was an adult.
Yeah. Now, we come to a very complicated terrain because there's a point in that article that talks about how this happened because the parents didn't know, right? Which brings up the obvious question, what would a parent do? What should a parent do in this scenario, right? And it's not necessarily something that many parents have gone through because this is new. I think one of the key themes that we keep encountering in the show is that these changes are unprecedented, right? Because the access we have to information and consequently pornography is just changing how we think about what's proper, what's timely, and the kind of conversations to have. So what would you suggest to parents who have this conundrum?
So yes, you are right. This is a bit controversial. My suggestion, of course, would be that parents need to talk to the children. There's no... I think we've talked about this in the show before. This idea of control, that you can control the child's access to these things, it is an illusion. We know that's not going to happen. We know that cannot happen. You can limit it. There are a whole bunch of blockers you can, you know, you can have on children's phones and computers and things. But ultimately, what needs to happen is parents and children have to have an open discussion about these things. The issue with this girl wasn't that she was watching pornography. The issue was that she had no access to information about safe sex, right? I don't even know if she understood the implications of having sexual intercourse, right? Just because you watch it on TV doesn't mean you understand it. Right? Mm-hmm. And these are the kinds of discussions parents should be having with children.
Yeah. Very provocative words, Vizsla, and I'm sure our listeners are sparked and piqued. And if they want to opine, they're welcome to WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or call the show at 03-7710-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'd love to hear from you and what you make of this situation. Now, I get it that that's the ideal scenario, but it's a tall order because even adults don't know how to talk about sex
Absolutely.
With each other. So what more crossing that generational gap, you know? It's very awkward. Like, what would be a starting point?
Well, we can start with social media itself. I was doing a quick search on YouTube, and there are a whole bunch of videos available that help parents talk to children about sex, or if the parents really are uncomfortable about that, to play the video and both the parent and the child sit and watch it together. And I know it's not just Western sites that do that. There are also some local channels that do this as well. And they're very informative and they're very good. And they use the kind of language that's accessible to children. They use the kind of language that doesn't frighten people. And also that isn't too scientific, too academic, very, very accessible. That could be a start. You know, people who... It will also be a good idea to explore bookstores because now there are a lot of books available that help you talk about these things to children. Simple things like naming your body parts, starting these conversations there.
Yeah.
And just, you know, being able to answer these questions and not being afraid to say, I don't know. So this is the thing with adults, right? They're so afraid to tell the kids, I don't know, right? It's okay if you don't know. The two of you can actually embark, you and your child can then embark on a bit of a project where you go and find information and come back and discuss it.
Yeah. And I think one of the key themes that we've kept coming to is the medium is the message, in that the conversation should not just be about sex or porn, but social media, what kind of pressures they cause, what sorts of addiction loops that they offer, right? And how we can get trapped in that and the kind of choices that we have to make when we navigate these changes in technology. I think that should be as much a part of the conversation as it is sex or pornography in this
Absolutely.
Case, right? Because
yeah.
The problem is not so much what they're watching, but the fact that they have that access very, very easily. So in addition to, like you said, being proactive as a parent and interested in the kinds of conversations you can have, talk also about social media, because you can't read this article or understand this issue without what's enabling that access to begin with.
Yes.
So let's take a break for now, and hopefully we get to hear from our listeners on the topic of pornography, its addiction, and how social media is enabling that to the forefront of mainstream life and cultural discourse. I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahmat alongside Vizla Kumarisan, and this is Digital Desires on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to Digital Desires. I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahmat alongside clinical psychologist Vizla Kumarisan, and we're discussing porn addiction today. And I mean, it's a pertinent question because I think by now it's so accessible, and I think everybody's thought about this, right? The possibility that regular consumption could become a problem at one point. So what do you say to that, Vizla?
Okay, so as mentioned earlier in the show, addiction is when the person has absolutely no control over what they want. It is the habit that has taken over the person. And you are, I mean, that's a very simple way of putting it, basically. You're constantly preoccupied, thinking about this, you have to have access to it. And not having access to it is going to result in some kind of withdrawal symptom.
So you can't function, basically, right?
Basically, you can't function. Your daily functioning depends on your access. Are you doing this habit or having this substance which you are addicted to?
Yeah, basically, it has power over you.
Absolutely.
Right, basically. I mean, cigarettes would be a good analogy for that.
Cigarettes,
right?
Yeah. Coffee. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, we are all very familiar with alcohol and drug addiction, not familiar in that sense, but we've heard so much about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty much how porn addiction works as well. If you don't view it, you will actually you will have, you know, adverse psychological or even physical reactions when you don't have access to it.
Yeah, so I guess pay attention to your daily habits and just how you're reacting to not, when you're not with access to that stuff, right?
So right, and regular porn consumption is all right, you know. And people have even argued it's quite healthy. It's a healthy expression of sexuality, and that's okay. But addiction is not okay.
Mm-hmm. Once again, our number is 03-771-09000, or you can WhatsApp your questions and comments to 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We are talking about porn addiction here on Digital Desires. I want to go back to your earlier point about having that conversation with children, especially given how complicated navigating technology is today. Now, to what end should the parent, in your opinion, direct the conversation? Because the conversation can happen, but some prefer abstinence.
Mm.
Some prefer safe options. So what do you suggest?
Well, the best practice would be to have to give the child all the options available. You can have your point of view, and you can make your case for that point of view. If the parent believes in abstinence only, there's nothing wrong in saying that. But I think research has shown, and that there is the scientific data to show this, to prove this, that abstinence only education isn't as effective. It works if young people, children, have all the information. They understand completely the impact of their decisions, what different things mean. Then they are in a better position to make those decisions.
Yeah, it sounds very complicated, right? Because the article that we referred to earlier focused on a 12-year-old.
Mm.
And as we're discussing this, right, the options that parents have, the things that they have to know, the kind of questions they have to ask, the discursive process can get quite intricate, right? Because like we said, when it comes to pornography and sex, even adults don't really know how to navigate it. So, and you said earlier too that the age limit will depend. It depends on how ready the child is or how ready the teenager is and how equipped the parents are, so on and so forth. So how does a parent know when to have that conversation?
Well, I think you can start the conversation as early as you like, right? And a lot of experts on child safety encourage the discussion to happen very early, especially now with many parents, many families relying on third persons to look after the children while the parents are at work. The children, you know, also come into contact with other children, the children's parents, the driver, all kinds of other people. And so it's always safer to educate the children on naming their body parts, understanding what is good touch, what's bad touch, when certain kinds of touch is not okay, all those kinds of things. It's it's important for the child's safety to have this discussion as early as possible.
Yeah.
Of course, you can't do that when the child doesn't understand words.
Sure, sure.
It has to happen when the child is already, you know, has a good grasp of words, can understand what sentences mean and things like that. And there's a, you know, whole bunch of books available. There are even Malaysian non-governmental organizations that actually have workshops and conduct classes and have a whole set of resources to help parents have these kinds of conversations with children. And the thing is, what in understanding how to navigate these things, like, you know, parents and parents finding their own comfort level with children, I think the bond between parent and child actually can improve if the parent and the parent agrees that, I don't know this, let's learn together. You learn on your side and I learn on my side. Let's come together and let's have this discussion. That actually enables the child to understand that they can trust the parent and to be able to have that free conversation. It actually, you know, it helps the child develop a better relationship with the parent and vice versa.
Yeah, I'm sensing a link here that the parent and child can kind of start with, in that the conversation is not so much about sex, but about knowing yourself, about autonomy, right? And that's a constant learning process, even for adults, right?
And this concept of autonomy is not just about sex, right? It also goes on, as you say, onto social media. Once a child has a good grasp of his or her own autonomy, they are far less likely to succumb to peer pressure, which we know exists a lot, especially for children on social media, whether it's Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, whatever it is, whatever the medium is. Children are very vulnerable. Even adolescents are very vulnerable. And making sure they have a good sense of autonomy, a good sense of agency is one of the best ways to protect them from these kinds of negative effects that come from peer pressure.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to the question of identity, knowing yourself, knowing what you want, knowing the kind of character you want to build, right? And that is a conversation that's broader than just where you click or the sites you go to. It's about what kind of choices do you want to make, right? So I think in that sense, it sounds like from what you're telling me, the parent and child can have a richer conversation rather than just about do's and don'ts, right? Because I think do's and don'ts tend to just go one way and it doesn't really welcome the more important kinds of inquiries. Now, the default scenario in Malaysia, however, is that people have their religious convictions. And that sex is often, at least premarital sex, is often in conflict with that. How do you then bridge that gap, right, between the kinds of interaction that you're endorsing and the fact that, for the most part, Malaysians still believe that premarital sex is taboo, pornography is a sin, and so on and so forth.
Yeah. So I think the other thing to bear in mind is that just because we teach children about sex, we provide them sex education, it isn't going to result in children having sex. And again, there is the science to prove that. There is a whole bunch of evidence that indicates this also. You're providing children information, right? And that doesn't mean that they are going to go out and have sex. The more the child understands that they can explore their curiosity in a safe way, which is by conversation, looking for information, knowing that there is an adult they can trust to point them in the right direction, also means that they're less likely to go out and experiment to find things out themselves, right? So, and I think there's also a lot of evidence to show that religious beliefs don't necessarily have to contradict the purposes of sexual education. Those two are not contradictory.
Yeah, because insofar as the sin is in the act, there's still a longer conversation that you can have that doesn't lead to the act. Right?
Exactly.
It can be a bigger conversation beyond the do's and don'ts.
Sex education is very much about understanding the body and what happens to the body, and it's not about instructions on what to do.
Right. We have Cash on the line with a question. Hello, Cash.
I just had a question about whether feminist porn exists, and if so, what is it?
Feminist porn, does it exist, and what constitutes feminist porn?
Okay. So, yes, feminist porn does exist. And I think feminist porn explores the more feminist aspects of how relationships work or how sexual relationships work, about negotiating consent, about exploring bodies in different ways, rethinking what pleasure means, because I think a lot of the feminist argument is that mainstream porn tends to be very male pleasure focused, while feminist porn also, you know, focuses on mutual pleasure. So it's very much grounded in these concepts and principles of equality.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a more advanced discussion to have with children, right? Because at some point after the identity part, you got to know what kinds of porn there are out there.
Exactly.
And that might be something to research further later, right? But that, I guess, leads us to the question of how we consume ethically when it comes to something as, you know, complicated as porn is, right? So what do you have to say about that? Because I think, unfortunately, maybe, or fortunately, I don't know, but the presumption here from the beginning is that for the most part, you can just make the right choices and then consume properly. But the industry itself is problematic in many ways. So how do we navigate that gap?
Mm. Well, I suppose this is where I think the internet helps. There's so much information available. And yes, you've got different kinds of pornography websites as well. There's some that you just click and watch, and there's some where you can interact a little bit more. There's more to read. There are questions you can ask and people will answer and things like that. So depending on what you want, there are different options available, right? But it comes back to how engaged you want to be in the process. Do you just want to be a passive consumer and you'll just click on any button that's thrown in your direction? Or are you going to, stop and think, wait a minute, I want to think about this and I want to see what else is out there and I want to see why this is different from that and what happens here. And, you know, there are so many websites that offer critiques, that offer narratives, that offer a whole bunch of editorials on different things, and people can read those things.
Yeah. Who knew porn would entail so much reading?
Right? Exactly. Yeah. Right.
Speaking of thinking and stopping.
I don't know if this is appropriate. I think there's also a kind of porn for people who read.
Oh. Well, yeah. Well, that was, I think, before porn became visual, right? People would read about it.
Oh, no. I mean, like, actual...
nerd porn or something like that.
I don't know if that's a technical term for
okay,
it, but
well,
there is.
Right, plenty of things to Google from today's show.
Exactly.
But I want to go back to your point about stopping and thinking about consuming. Now, there's going to be guilt, there's going to be shame. It doesn't matter what kind of porn you consume. It could be very, quote-unquote, soft or heavy or whatever. I mean, I don't know what's out there these days. But how do you negotiate that bit?
Okay. So guilt and shame has been associated with sex for
since Adam, sounds like.
Apparently, depending on what you refer to historically, right? It's very hard to separate the two. And I think the more we don't engage with proper sex education across the board, it's very hard to disengage from those feelings of guilt and shame. Sex is, it's a human thing. It's a very natural thing for humans to do. We need it in order for our species to propagate and, you know, all kinds of different things. But in order for people to understand that, they need to negotiate the different, they need to, not negotiate, they need to peel back a lot of the other things that have been thought to them, that have been talked about to them, that have been said to them, how we have been socially constructed to look at sex, behave sexually, and all these kinds of things. We need to unpack all of those things, and that requires a fair bit of work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so easy now, or it's easier to do now, because there's a plethora of information available, and some of it very, very easy to consume. And again, I've come back to whether or not what people want to exercise those options.
Yeah. Can I draw an analogy between, say, consuming product sustainably, right? In that you don't want your consumption to damage the planet, and to the extent you want to minimize it. I think maybe this could work with porn consumption as well, right? The same sort of discernment in terms of your complicity with what you're watching could apply.
Yeah, absolutely. And the better we understand things, the more comfortable we become with it. And this is, I think, this is what we as consumers, as Malaysians, whatever it is, need to do. We just need to understand sex better.
Mm-hmm. Once again, you can call us at 0377109000, WhatsApp us at 0187898899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. We are discussing porn addiction on Digital Desires here. Yeah, I mean, the other thing is, like the other topics that we've considered in this show, because technology is demanding so much for our attention, right? There's a term for an attention economy, mm-hmm. right? The apps are constantly asking us to check it, view it, and we are getting basically welded to our gadgets that looking at these things is a question of like asking, looking into who you are as well, right? Because there are more options available in terms of what to read and what to watch, the question of who you are as a viewer, as a reader, has to be addressed as well. It's not just about sex necessarily. It's not just about morality even, right? It's about understanding yourself. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting because what you are is what you bring into how you consume and how you interpret things and then what you do with that. So that is a really important modulator, I think, mm-hmm. Of social media and its consumption.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have a question from WhatsApp. Is watching porn a form of cheating?
Oh, okay. Do you want to take this question and then maybe I'll add
I actually
on?
Don't know, but it depends what kind of ground rules your relationship
yes.
has, right? Because I think... because you say it's so ubiquitous. And unfortunately, like it or not, this is how people's first encounter with sex sometimes, right? That this is how they start visualizing it and learning and taking cues and so forth. It's hard to kind of separate your, I guess, coming of age with regards to this from consuming porn in a certain way. And that you're going to bring those assumptions into a relationship, unfortunately. And it's a healthy conversation to have, right?
Yes. And I think, you know, there's nothing... I mean, we all have our fantasies and not all of us are in relationships where our partners feel... Not our... You know, people's partners feel comfortable enough to enact those fantasies. And fantasies are completely normal.
Or even to share them, right?
Or even to share them, right? So porn still becomes a very safe option within relationships to experience and express those fantasies. And the other thing also is that in many relationships, it's not uncommon for the persons involved to have different sex drives.
Mm-hmm.
And the general rule of thumb is that you go at the rate of the person with the lower sex drive. Now, this makes it very difficult for the person with the higher sex drive. So then porn becomes a very safe way to get sexual release or achieve, you know, all those kinds of things. But whether or not it's cheating, like what you've said, it goes back to the ground rules. I think couples or people in relationships need to have this conversation at the outset to outline when it's okay and when it's not okay. What would be the limits? You know, even just exploring whether or not people are comfortable or not with pornography.
Mm-hmm.
And then that would be easier for both people in the relationship to negotiate these things. So I think cheating, it's very hard to say yes or no. It really depends on the kind of agreements that you come to in your relationship.
Yeah. We have Joseph back on the line. Joseph, can you hear us?
Hello, Hello.
Hi, Joseph. This is Vizla, and we've got Fuad here as well.
Yes, hi. I want to ask, because the government seems to think that those who see porn, has a mental health issue. So is it true? And what's your take on this? Huh? Thank you. Huh?
Porn consumption and mental health.
Mm.
What do you say to that?
Well, this is not something that's just an issue, a question that our government is facing. Many governments around the world are facing this. And even I think the field of psychiatry and psychology has battled with this throughout the years. And I think where we are now, where there's a better understanding of, human biology, our sexual responses, our sexuality and things like that. The short answer to your question is that no. Watching porn is not a mental illness, right? So coming back to our our discussion, addiction is an illness. And addiction is not specific to porn. Addiction could be alcohol, different forms of substances, work, even sex addiction, is something that's debatable now or debated now, but that is when it becomes a mental illness. It is not the porn that's the issue. It is the habit of consumption that is the issue.
Yeah, and the way that society as such has framed sex in general, right, is that it's always, because it's so taboo, that the slightest mention of it or the slightest discussion of it can feel excessive because it's so rarely talked about. What more when it's watched, right? Because it's so like sidelined or it's something that's sort of like stuffed into the private sphere. When it's aired out, right? I mean, verbally, that is, it can easily feel odd or over the top or just misplaced. But unfortunately, we have to wrap up now. Thanks again for your questions and comments and tweets and WhatsApp. It was very, very animated and honest at times. So we appreciate that. We welcome you to email the show at some point. You can find us at biggerpicture@bfm.my or look us up on Facebook, Digital Desires, type that in search space. And you will find our page. Be sure to like it. We share some articles there sometimes related to the broader conversations we should have about how screen culture is changing us. Vizsla, you are on Twitter as well, right?
I am on Twitter. Just find me at Vizsla Kumarisen.
Or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Once again, thanks a lot for listening. I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahman, alongside clinical psychologist Vizsla Kumarisen, and this is Digital Desires on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.